Chapter 4. Fort Bend County Correctional. Manny sat quietly as he waited for the call. His bed sheets were folded square, the toilet buffed to a brilliant shine. He looked around the chilly cell with appreciation, holding only the borrowed Bible. He would take nothing with him but the clothes he'd worn when he arrived. Narrow, efficient, hard. This place had been a crucible for his transformation. Once, he had been lazy, indulgent, distractible. Gone now were his vanity and pride, the rage, the bluster. He had given in too easily to the whims of his loins, that barking urge that compelled him to plow the nearest piece of flesh. He'd even done men in the early days of his term. Terrific come, he remembered with a hot shudder, then clocked his head on the cinder block behind him. Steady. Though it had taken many years, he was now well-liked by the inmates. As hardened as everyone tried to be, he had learned their needs. For friendship, for touch, for someone to hold their secrets. Perhaps he had not given Kit credit for keeping him company. He had never done well on his own, and yet he was bored by others, repulsed. How the loneliness had crept in and reached down his throat and gagged him. He'd known this feeling before. It was the oldest one. The sound of no one there. The cool of no one's touch. He'd felt it in the corner of his treeless yard, where his mother would send him for being too loud or for creeping around. He'd sit in the scant shade of a ragged bird of paradise until he blistered, wishing her dead. He'd felt it in the room he shared with his brother, he alone in his bed while his mother, smelling of rum, would slip in next to Leo and make the covers move. To his face, she called Manny an angel, her baby blue. But in the night, she passed him over. He had used his eyes as a weapon against the loneliness, tricked the teachers into loving him, made fake friends, but the feeling followed him still. From the tennis clubs to strip clubs, it crept along, cautious and hungry at his heels. As he held hearts and broke them, as women woke up from a dream to find that he and their money had disappeared. As he got older and more skilled at outwitting the loneliness, he'd enjoy long stretches of snag-free cons. He'd start to have kinder opinions of people. Even as he was slipping the diamond from a woman's finger, he'd wish her well. They're only things, he'd tell himself. But the lonesome feeling gained on him, gulping and smacking. And the longer he'd enjoy some peace, the more brutal the blow when the feeling returned. And then came Kit. Like him, she was angry and lonesome, misunderstood. And she scared him. That fiercest glint when her eyes narrowed and stared straight through him. Still, he knew she loved him. Sweet words were not her way. Her staying with him, watching all he did, that's how he knew. "I trust you," was what he'd understood when she stopped sleeping with a shiv. And when he finally took her in his bed, her teeth in his flesh had done the talking for her. "You're all I need," she had said, without saying a word. He supposed part of what he loved about her was that she was capable of leaving, hurting him. That wildness he had seen so early on, had felt under his skin like the itch of a poisonous plant. Something pitiless and feral. It thrilled him, stirred up a feeling in him he had never felt for anyone. Respect. Having Kit in his life all those years, someone to look after and think about, someone he wanted to please, had warmed him over. Because of her, The heart he'd left for dead had stirred and coughed back to life. Even the sex was secondary. It was that this creature was the one person on the planet he understood. He had finally found his kind. And she had just driven away. All that time, he just hadn't thought about it ending. Certainly not like that. Not with her leaving him. In his fucking Mustang. On his first day in prison, they stripped, probed, and penetrated. Doused him in chemical cleaner. Sheared his beautiful hair. Within hours, he had committed an infraction. So minor, a nothing little comment about the children of one of the guards that landed him in solitary confinement. He had retched at its smell, sharp with aged and layered human mess. They had not told him how long he would be there, so the time stretched out like one long, horrific night. When the hallucinations came, it was a comfort, because at least he wasn't alone. By the time he left solitary, what turned out to be a week later, he had broken two fingers and stripped his nails and cracked his skull. He had spilled his own fluids of every sort, and the stench had become a part of him, unscrubbable, a permanent stain. And in and out of solitary he went. It had come as a great shock that there was no way to predict or avoid what would get him in trouble. Charm, manipulation, cunning were of little use to him among the inmate brutes and the sadists that guarded them. His great revelation had come during a particularly long stretch in the hole. Such a fitting name. A dark, empty, swallowing thing. As usual, they hadn't informed him how long he would be there. Another form of torture. So it could have been 3 months or six. He couldn't be sure. He could only describe it as the sensation of melting under immense and excruciating heat, where the thing that was melting was not the body, but the self. He felt himself melt, then boil, then evaporate, then vanish. And in the stillness, he sensed the awesome presence of God. It was a feeling of being held and accepted just as he was. And from nothing, he rematerialized. He was reborn. From then on, Manny knew that he was not merely a son of God, but his right hand, the doer of deeds on his behalf. The waiting was over. Now, he was coming for her. He was ready. The buzzer sounded and the steel gate opened, gnashing on its rails. Manny stepped outside the prison walls and took a moment to savor his freedom. It was overcast and humid. In a lookout 30 feet overhead, an armed guard hawked a gobbet from deep in his throat. Manny squinted up at him and smiled, saluted. The guard spat, and it splatted an arm's length from where Manny stood. His younger self might have let the gesture spoil his day, but today, he filled his lungs and merely felt grateful to be here. A two-tone gray and black Cadillac blaring Guns N' Roses pulled up on the wrong side of the road. A long, pantyhosed leg kicked open the door and Red unfolded herself from the driver's seat. "Well, hey, am I late? I am, aren't I? I swear to you I left the house early. I promise you I did. Sometimes I think the clock is playing tricks on me, but that's not important. Look at you. You're so skinny." He smiled, let her talk herself out. Her round parts had withered some with time. Her spandex tank and skirt were the tired pastels of too many washings. And when she embraced him, he smelled dental decay. heard the rattle of pleurisy in her lungs. She needed a shower more than he did. Still, he was pleased to see her. He had phoned her a handful of times while he was inside. Red was his only friend, and he had known he might need to call on her when the time came. They had scarcely left the penitentiary grounds when Red slapped her hands to the wheel and ogled him. She twisted a knob on the radio to lower the volume. "All right, spill it," she said, her face pregnant with anticipation. "Did you let them F you in the fucking bay?" Manny smiled and ignored the prompt, preferring to gaze at the blur of trees and stacks of clouds above them, feel the speed of the car charging down the highway, like flying. It was all so magnificent. God's glory, a welcome. He rolled the window halfway down and closed his eyes against the wind. "You did, you dirty boy," she said, maddeningly satisfied. "What did you think? Not bad, right? Not my thing personally, but I hear it's sensational if you've got a prostate. You know, I think all you guys would be effing each other if you weren't so dang insecure. That's just my opinion, but tell me, now that you've had a taste, I bet you had a ball." She slapped him in the chest. "Ball," she said loudly and laughed a little too hard at the accidental pun. Manny thought she seemed wired, maybe had a little toot before picking him up. He had seen her deteriorate over her infrequent visits, and the organized professional he had known was now little more than a junkie whore. "I'm on a different path now," Manny said calmly. "I've found the Bible." Red raised her eyebrows and puckered her mouth mockingly. He had damaged her pride by not playing along with the sordid inquiry. She lit a cigarette and turned the volume back up, some moody pop song that bored him. "Okay, Father Manny," she mumbled. "Good for fucking you." Red kept her mouth shut, a rarity, the rest of the trip. When the Cadillac arrived at her weathered little bungalow, she muscled open her front door and pushed aside a pile of unopened mail, pocketed her keys. The once tidy home had the look of a flop house. More litter was visible than floor. On the coffee table, a scattering of needles, cigarette butts, cracked eyeshadow pucks, a clear plastic bottle filled with liquor or piss or lemon squirt. There was a humid, cheesy smell about the place. Manny opened a window. "Oh my word, is it that bad in here?" She fished a book of matches from her waistband, struck one on the sole of her shoe, and blew out the flame. As she waved the smoke around, her breasts bobbed together, but Manny felt only disgust. "I'm so embarrassed," she said. "You know, in the good old days, I had a maid come twice a week to clean up after my sloppy ass." She flicked her teeth with a long nail. "I guess I've let things go a bit. You always did like things just so, didn't you? I just don't know how you made it in prison. Must have been, well, I don't even want to imagine, but it must have been awful. I bet you're happier than a bird dog to be out of there. Woo! Let's toast to that." She unhooked her bra, a graying, lacy thing, and let it slither out her sleeve. She lifted an open bottle of Southern Comfort and poured the auburn liquid into a coffee mug, passing it to Manny. He sniffed, grimaced, set it down on the windowsill. "I don't mess around with this anymore," he said. Red clicked her tongue and shook her head, a little venom in her eyes. "The tables have turned, haven't they? Well, here's to freedom." She tipped up the bottle of SoCo, sending the fruity syrup down her throat. Looks like you've hit some hard times, Miss Red, Manny said. Why didn't you mention it to me?
Red laughed. You know, I never did need a pimp before. Small town men were just kind of docile, easy to manage. Everyone had a wife. Everyone cared if their wife found out. They never got rough with me, never anything I couldn't handle. I don't know what changed.
She trailed off and headed for the front door with a manic thrust.
What am I doing complaining to the man who just spent the 80s in prison? You hungry? I'm hungry. Man alive, I could eat a bear right now. Let's go out.
Manny took her by the shoulders and felt bones that were very close to the skin.
You still have running water?
She nodded.
You have to ask?
Okay, go clean yourself up, he said.
Truth was, he couldn't stand the smell of her.
Me clean up? You're the one fresh out of the pokey.
I was thinking I'd fix us some supper, he said.
Honey, I don't have shit to eat. I was thinking we could go sneak into a Sizzler or something.
I learned to cook in there. You'd be surprised what I can do with a can of meat and some ketchup.
He grinned and flashed his million-dollar blues. He knew the power of that simple, winning act of charm. The look that made people see possibility where there wasn't any. That made them lower their defenses when they shouldn't. Red nibbled her chapped and flaking lip.
You're not gonna fleece me, are ya?
I'm hurt you'd even mention it, Manny said.
She laughed herself into a coughing fit and skittered out of the room.
Okay, you win. I'm gonna wash the scum off me, she said over her shoulder. But I'll always be a dirty whore.
Manny found a packet of dried onion and a can of olives in the cupboard. A tube of Jimmy Dean's sausage in the freezer behind a berg of frost, and some white rice in a takeout container in the fridge. He spooned some cloudy bacon fat from a can under the sink into a hot pan and sizzled the onion. Then he added chopped olives, browned the sausage, dumped in the rice, and wet it all with a splash of water. He put a lid on it and turned the heat down low. While he waited for the thing to cook, Manny observed the chaos of memorabilia on Red's fridge. Photos of babies grown into kids and all the way to adulthood. Blonde, sunburnt, cheerful. Primitive drawings. Birth announcements and Christmas cards. He was amused by these strange artifacts from a world far away from his. One note buried among them stuck out. The letter was written on yellowing paper and unsigned, but he recognized the handwriting immediately, large and careful, like that of a child who is learning her alphabet. He plucked it from its smiling rooster magnet. Dear Red, I found my aunt. Thought you should know. Don't come looking. Just wanted to tell you I made it out and I'm okay. Hope you are too. Her aunt. He remembered her spinning the tail on the spot, with her dirty face and the dribble coming out of her nose, and that he had been sure she was bluffing. He'd gone along with the story and even taken her to the edge of that town, whatever it was. Certain that she was trying to make him think she had somewhere to go where people were waiting for her. But the aunt really existed, and now it seemed the girl had picked up the scent she had been following all those years before. He was lost in a rare slurry of insecurity. All that time they were together, had she just been waiting for her moment to escape? He lost his bearings as the kitchen swayed around him. And he lowered himself into a nearby chair, buried his face in his hands. No, that girl had worshipped him, had put herself in danger for him. There had been plenty of opportunities for her to leave, and she was more than capable.
He had never kept her in a cage. He slipped the letter in the folds of his near-empty wallet. If Red was in touch with Kit, she'd know where to find her. 20 minutes later, Red appeared in a bathrobe with a towel on her head, looking just as terrible as before, but wet.
"Guess they shut off the gas, 'cause that water was cold as a witch's titty," she said, and wiggled a pinky in her ear. "Oh, hi. That smells good, Merlin. What kind of magic you making?"
Manny had accidentally let the bottom layer scorch while he snooped, but it didn't matter. Junkies weren't choosy. He piled the prison cell hash in a bowl and sprinkled some salt over the top. "Voila," he said. Red threw him a coy look and dug in.
"Oh my God. Oh my God."
Her eyes rolled back and she pressed both hands on the table.
"Oh, Manny, honey, darling, there are not enough blowjobs in the world to thank you for this."
She stamped her heel like she was killing a cockroach.
"I'm not kidding. I will fuck you into an early grave. I swear I will."
"There is one way you can thank me," he said, cocking his head.
"Anything you want, baby. I'm yours,"
she said through a mouthful of rice, parting her robe and shimmying her still buoyant breasts.
"Name it."
Manny wiped his mouth and folded the napkin across his lap, then leveled his eyes on Red. "I need you to help me find Kit." She stopped chewing and went still.
"Sorry, I don't know where she is, Manny."
She held up both hands.
"Haven't seen her. Hide nor hair, Manny, I swear."
"You don't need to lie," he said. "I saw the litter." Red folded her arms over her chest and shook her head like there were flies in her face.
"No, no, no. I don't know shit. The litter just showed up one day, ages ago. She didn't say where, and she never wrote again."
"Look," Manny said, trying to keep his voice tame. "I'm not gonna hurt her. I just miss her. That's all. I don't blame her for leaving me. I don't blame her for any of it. I'm the one who needs to apologize. I can't live knowing how I hurt her, so I need to see her. Can you understand that?" Red was crying now. With shaking hands, she held a cigarette to her lips and searched the room for a light. Manny went to the stove and turned on an electric burner. "Here's the thing," he said, the rage moving him to hasty words. He was trying to be cool, but nothing got under his skin like being misunderstood. "I ask for one thing, so I can get on with my life. You let me in, and now I know where your sisters live and all their little progeny, and now I may have to tell them why you never show up for Christmas. And you know that's not all I'll do, but I'm hoping it won't have to get that far, okay?" Red's face was dripping with tears and snot.
"That's evil, Manny. I knew you were a son of a bitch, but I didn't think you'd be that cruel to old Red."
She started to look around the room, and Manny suspected she was searching for a weapon.
"It's in the letter," Red said. "She found her aunt. She told me once, but I can't remember the name of that town she lives in. Armadillo Band or some shit, okay?"
He pressed his foot against the chair she was sitting on and sent her flying back, whacking her head against the floor. Her bathrobe flew open, and she snaked around, emaciated, pathetic. She rasped out some cries. Then she pushed herself up, drew her chair up to the table, and sat back down.
"Lord, help me," she said, all tearful. And he knew she'd come around.
It's Pecan fucking Hollow. And that's all I know, motherfucker, she said. God fucking damn.
Thank you. He slipped a fresh cigarette from the pack on the table and went to the stove. By now, the coil glowed orange. He lit the cigarette on the burner and crossed the kitchen to where she sat.
You made me the bad guy, he said,
holding the hot end toward a sore on her wrist. She yanked the arm back.
I'm not the bad guy. I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm right with the Lord, and I have to get right with Kit.
He slipped the cigarette between her lips, then thumbed the storm of bruising and track marks in the crook of her elbow. She whimpered and glared at him in helpless rage.
You're the bad guy, he said. Not me.
Chapter 5. Manny thanked the bus driver and stepped onto the sticky asphalt of the bus stop in Pecan Hollow. He was close. But first, he would need to eat to quell this screaming hunger. He inhaled the unctuous odor of deep-fried potatoes and crossed the main road to the diner. In prison, nearly 14 years of insipid slop had passed through his system. Bland calories, all bearing the same undertone of tin and rancid fat. And there was never enough. Inside the diner, Manny scanned the room, taking account of every person in there. It was a habit he'd picked up from robbing gas stations, because every person was a variable, and he needed to know who was there, where they were, and what they were doing. To his left, at 9 o'clock, sat a middle-aged Mexican couple, hunched over matching plates of eggs. Immigrants, maybe. Trouble avoidant. At 1 o'clock, a portly trucker picked his teeth, his plate wiped clean, while a red-headed waitress warmed up his coffee. Women screamed. Truckers tackled. The elderly were usually meek, but some had nothing to lose and would take risks. Directly to his right, a milquetoast man of 40 laid down a fiver and sorted his change by category. He was the type to soil his pants silently and call the cops. Dead ahead, a homely girl in her mid-20s cleared away some dishes. As she ran her rag up and down the counter, her waist-long braid, loosely bound, hung over her shoulder and swayed. She had a faintly inbred look to her. Poor teeth, a soft chin, and her hair nearly matched the putty color of her skin. He sat down right in front of her. When she looked at him, her eyes darted away as if he were hot to touch.
Hello there, little lady.
He let his words unfurl like a spool of velvet. She did not look up, but the skin around her collarbone flushed pink in splotches. He cocked his head to meet her eyes, and she acquiesced. He had not lost his touch.
Can I help you?
She gasped, but it sounded more like,
Can I help you?
What's your name, sweets? He asked.
She looked down at the nameplate pinned to her breast. He smiled.
Sandy,
he said, clasping her hand between his before laying it back on the counter.
Howdy. I'm Manny. Now, I'm awful hungry.
She slid a menu toward him and continued to wipe down the same clean spot, the blotches on her chest now more defined.
Let's see here, he said, surveying the menu. Well, it all sounds so good. How am I gonna pick just one thing?
As he looked from Sandy's braless breasts to the menu, he felt a shimmer of his appetites,
electric with wanting. He deepened his breath and slammed his knee firmly up against the counter.
You okay?
She asked, sweet with concern.
About to be,
he said, and pushed the menu back to her.
I'll have one of everything, please.
She stalled, confused, and waited to hear more.
Everything?
First meal in 14 years, he said with a wink. I told you I was hungry.
She started slowly for the kitchen and turned around at the swinging doors.
I don't mean to pry, mister, but how are you going to pay for all that?
Manny smiled, slipped a gold link bracelet from his pocket, and coiled it on the counter. He hadn't stolen, but merely recovered it from a woman's purse, which had fallen on the floor of the bus while she was sleeping. Sandy draped it over her wrist. She pursed her mouth into a white line while she deliberated, then disappeared into the kitchen. When she returned, she had frosted pink color on her lips and had smoothed back her hair.
My boss says he'll take it, she said.
A young man with an apron around his waist and a rag slung over his shoulder slammed his hand on the bell and barked,
Order it!
Sandy startled, scurried away, and disappeared between the swinging doors of the kitchen. Manny was irritated at the manager for interrupting what seemed to be a promising conversation. He was starving, too, and could scarcely wait the 15 minutes or more for the food to come. There was a thin newspaper left behind by a customer on the seat next to him. He picked it up and tried to read the headline, but he was too distracted. Although he had fantasized for years about what he would do, he found that the closer he got to her, being here where she'd been living, it was as though the slate were clean. He had so many questions he needed answered. But you couldn't put pressure on Kit like that. You had to go slow, give her nothing to push against. He knew how to handle her. A dusty-looking cowboy ambled in and swung his hips into the first booth by the door. He looked like a real shit-kicker. A horrible thought crossed Manny's mind as it occurred to him that she might have been with someone other than him. After all this time, had she given up waiting for him and caved? If she had, she never would have stayed with anyone. But maybe she'd shuffled through a lot of them, searching, always searching for a substitute for her one and only, her Manny. He seethed at the thought. As he looked down, he realized he had shredded the newspaper into a feathery mess. Just then, a cook, two waitresses, and Sandy brought out trays of bacon, sausage, pancakes and waffles, a half dozen sandwiches, sides of cornbread, beans and rice, migas and chilaquiles, roast beef and gravy, pies, cakes, and pralines. They spread the plates out and covered the entire counter. Sandy looked as proud as if she had made the food herself. He put a napkin in his lap and said a prayer of thanks. Manny took exactly one bite of each of over 50 dishes. When he was finished, he wiped his lips, folded his napkin, and tucked it under his plate.
Miss Sandy, how old are you?
25 next month.
Oh, you're just a little baby, he said. You wouldn't know my friend then.
Maybe I will. Who is it?
A girl I used to know. Strong legs, little titties, kind of looks like a pretty boy. At least, she used to. She could be a big fatty now for all I know.
Sandy giggled, exposing crooked front teeth, and covered her mouth.
I don't know. Doesn't ring a bell just yet,
she said.
What was her name?
Kit, he said.
Well, sure, I know Kit,
she said, a little loudly, excited to have made a connection.
You know her?
Manny asked. There was a rush of heat, and he nearly lost his breath.
Yeah, of course, everyone knows everyone around here. What about you? Just passing through, or...
He was so swept away by the good news that her innuendo took a moment to sink in. She could be helpful, this one. He'd indulge her. Manny slid his hand next to Sandy's and rubbed her pinky with his. Do you know where she lives, sweetheart? Sandy pulled her hand back self-consciously and looked down, smiling.
She lives just down the road. I can show you, if you like.
A calm befell him.
No, darling. Just point me in the right direction. I'll find my way.
She looked disappointed as she walked around the counter and led him to the window.
Just down that road a mile or so. Little white farmhouse, chicken coop in the yard. Can't miss it.
I hope I'll be seeing you soon, he said,
and dusted her marshmallow soft hand with his lips.
It's always good to have a friend in town.
Chapter 6 Kit stood at the kitchen counter, stapling some chicken wire to a wooden frame. A raccoon had muscled loose the henhouse door, and while it hadn't hurt the chickens, all the eggs were gone. Charlie sat cross-legged in an antique chair by the window, filing the knees of her jeans until they frayed. Kit had already yelled at her for ruining perfectly good pants and said that she would have to pay for the next pair herself, but today she let it be. Charlie had been surprisingly helpful at the vet's, and the hard work had seemed to chill her out a bit. Kit was enjoying the little stretch of ceasefire between them, certain it would be brief.
Who's that man?
Charlie called from her perch at the window. Kit went to the window, but whoever it was stood out of view. She hoped it wasn't some fallout from the pencil incident. Sugar Faye's husband worked in oil and probably had a hotshot lawyer in Houston that could take her for every cent. But that didn't seem like Sugar's style. It was more likely she'd bring over some guilt cookies and try again to get Kit to atone. Kit was trying to decide which was worse when she heard the man's footsteps on the creaky stairs and a knockety knock at the door. Outside the house, Manny popped a lemon candy he'd taken from the diner and crushed it between his teeth. He buffed his dusty boots on his calves and tucked in his shirt. It was fortunate he had been able to satisfy his hunger and clear his head with the long walk. It helped to settle the urges, the pesky lashes of desire. He had longed for her in prison, and defiled her in many ways, for which he had repented. Even now, he thought he could smell her, woodsy and bitter, gamey. But he was a godlier man, cleansed and polished to a comely glow. The canopy of pecan trees rustled above him, filtering the last of the light of day, and he felt just fine as he ascended the front steps and knocked. The day had come, and he was ready for her. Kit opened the door a crack to see who had come to bother her. There was a man standing there, tall and fit, but she couldn't make out his face. The western sun hung low and lit him in silhouette from behind. Was it a drifter looking for work? She felt above the doorframe to make sure her gun was there if she needed it, and it was, cool and loaded.
What do you want, mister?
She said, her voice husky and bored. She heard him chuckle softly and clear his throat. She bristled at the sound, but couldn't place it. She flipped on the porch light.
Hello, Kit, he said. Before her brain could register, her nerves fired all at once on high voltage. There stood Manny. Older, his physique severe and sinewy, handsome as ever. Blue eyes glinted under smiling lids. He wore a checked button-down and old jeans with the waist cinched to keep them up. The same clothes he wore on that last day. Kit realized she had stopped breathing and inhaled fast. She said nothing, for no words came to mind. Only a violent clash of fear and longing. In one vessel were all the qualities she had loved. The confidence, the caring, the crisp attention that made her feel singular in a room when all she'd ever felt was invisible. Yet she could not forget he was all she hated, too. He was calculating, selfish, and he had a capacity to deceive like no one she had ever met. Manny's expression was soft, gentle.
Forgive me for popping up like this.
His voice trailed, but his gaze stayed with Kit, steady and probing.
I only just got let out and had to come see you, he said.
His eyes dropped, and with his middle finger he strummed the mesh on the screen door between them.
I won't stay long. Just hoped you'd allow me to say a few things one of these days when you're ready. I've had a lot on my mind. I'll be staying at the Big Sky Motel off the interstate, not 5 miles away. I won't call on you again, but if you'd like to talk, you could find me there. I live honestly now, Kit.
He seemed to be waiting for a response. But what could she offer? She could scarcely trust her senses that it was really him, let alone make sense of the information. It felt as though the walls around her had become brittle and thin, that the whole house could fold in on her. Whatever sense of safety she had scraped together over the years vanished. He cocked his head, and a dark wing of hair swept over one eye. He tucked it behind his right ear.
You don't have to fret, Kitty, he said and smiled with sympathetic, upturned brows. Though, I won't blame you if you do.
Her body was frozen, but her mind roiled like 1,000 rats. She couldn't make sense of this Manny. How neatly she had tucked him away in a box and left him, untouched, except when he emerged in her dreams. She remembered the article she'd read, how he'd taken the blame for their crimes. Did he think that had settled the score? How would he collect the debt? And what did he really want from her? A cold sweat slicked across her forehead and the back of her neck as she thought of Charlie.
You're gonna have to get on out of here,
was all she could say, and she toed the door shut with her boot, locked it twice.
Fair enough, Kit, he called out. You know where to find me.
Then he turned and left, scuffing his boots in the oyster shell driveway, humming a gospel hymn.
Who was that?
Charlie's voice sounded sweet, but taunting.
I have no idea.
Kit knew she seemed shaken. She searched for words but hadn't the means to form a sentence, no less lie convincingly. She filled a glass with water from the tap, the tinge of sulfur from their well strangely soothing.
Used to be a friend.
It was the best she could do for now. She hoped it would satisfy Charlie at least until she could think of something more convincing.
You don't have any friends,
Charlie said. Arms folded, looking like she smelled a story. She wasn't going to let this go.
He's not a nice man,
Kit added, falsely absorbed in a scab on her elbow. Charlie laughed.
Seem pretty fucking nice to me. Hey, you don't talk like that in this house.
Kit's voice got shrill. She wasn't ready to discuss this.
Okay, I'll talk like that out there.
Charlie barged through the screen door and stood outside, shouting,
He seems pretty fucking nice to me.
In a few swift steps, Kit bounded through the door and tackled her daughter to the grass, fists pinned at her ears.
Girl, you listen here. Keep away from that man. Do you understand?
Charlie glared back at Kit, her features hard and defiant, but her eyes wavered. She pushed Kit off and ran inside. Kit sat on the steps, unsteady with fright. A crowd of emotions barged in at once. Regret for getting physical with Charlie, terror that Manny was back, bewilderment at how different he seemed. Kind, almost, and humbled. She was pissed that she had been caught off guard. Ashamed at realizing that beneath it all, a part of her was happy to see him, as if her heart had forgotten all the rest. Standing there in her home, between her daughter and Manny, she had felt ready to burst, like every thought or worry from Charlie's entire life wedged itself into that moment. She tried to numb out, but couldn't pull the plug on her feelings. Kit quaked. She dashed around back, grabbed the machete, and tore into the tangle of blackberry vines at the door. There was no way to push the feelings away, so she brought them down on the brambles. Long, vicious slashes in quick succession, sections broke off and flew around her. Each time her blade made contact, she yelled savagely, like her voice could do the cutting, on and on until her muscles turned to mush. She collapsed on a litter of thorns, blind to her surroundings, breathless. The memories, long sequestered, emerged like bees dispatched from a shaken hive. One, two at a time, then several more until the whole swarm was upon her. Part 2.